Good morning, everyone. Whoa, it's very loud. Let's turn it down some more. I got one of those voices that projects. How's everyone doing? Is it too early? Everybody out partying last night? It's 11, really? Come on. I understand if it was like 9 o'clock, but geez. How's everybody doing? There we go. Give me some claps. All right. Excellent. Well, thank you again for coming to this this panel. I am certainly excited to be able to introduce all of these folks to you. We have a fun 45, 50 minutes ahead of us. Just to give you guys a little bit of an idea, we're not going to talk the whole time. There's a great piece of wisdom I was sharing with the team earlier. I'm going to remind them of and remind you of that blessed are the brief, for they shall be reinvited. And so we will try to be brief in our answers, and then we request in the Q&A part, it'll be 10 or 15 minutes at the end, that any questions, I'm sure you've all done this before, you've all been in the panel where people like to recite their life history before they ask a question. We're going to ask you all to keep your questions really tight so we can get to as many of them as possible as well. So my name is Philippe Cousteau. I am a social entrepreneur and explorer and an environmental advocate. I am a special correspondent for CNN International, as well as the founder of Earth Echo International. We're one of the leading youth environmental education and service learning organizations in the United States, and as well as co-founder of a company called Azure Worldwide, which my co-founder's here in the audience, Andrew Snow White. And we're a creative design and development company, and kind of here under the auspices of Azure, actually, which has the partnership with the University of Virginia around the Bay Game. So before I go on, I wanted to introduce my fellow panelists to you. We have to my right, immediate right, is Jeffrey Plank, the Associate Vice President for Research at the University of Virginia. He coordinates the identification, conceptualization, and implementation of large-scale institution-wide research initiatives, and most recently, the Pan-University Sustainability Institute. He's been a leader and really a visionary for the UVA Bay Game Project, and he's really pioneered the innovative participatory simulation that we're going to share with you that is the Bay Game as a proof of concept for demonstrating the potential of digital and social media to motivate personal and collective behavior change for environmental conservation. And then next to Jeffrey is Carrie Freeman, who's the Director of Sustainable Business Innovation at Intel Corporation. Sure, you guys have heard of Intel maybe a little bit every once in a while. Hopefully, come across them here and there. I'm looking at their sticker on my computer right now. Carrie is responsible for the strategy and business development of eco-technology solutions in the areas of environment and natural resource management. In her previous role as corporate sustainability strategist, she directed corporate-wide strategic sustainability efforts, working with stakeholders across the company to ensure that Intel continues to build upon its industry leadership in sustainability. She joined in 1998, and she's been a regional environmental relations manager, an engineering manager, technical program manager. She is a renaissance woman at Intel and all the great work that she's done. She's on the boards of the Nature Conservancy of New Mexico, the Permaculture Credit Union, and acts in an advisory capacity to the Water Innovations Alliance Technology Venture Corporation. And she holds an MBA in environmental policy and planning from the University of New Mexico. And to my left is Ashok Kamal, co-founder and CEO of Benu. Benu is a leader in green social media marketing. He coined the term green gamification. Ashok, right here. That's something I use all the time. And has worked extensively with Fortune 500 clients and startups to develop game-based campaigns that promote sustainability while creating enterprise value. He has a career as a social entrepreneur, spans the for-profit and nonprofit sector, so he's been on both sides of the aisle, including launching Progressive Entertainment Company, leading a youth development organization, and working on Newsweek magazine's inaugural green rankings while he worked at KLD Research and Analytics. So that is our panel for you this morning. And without further ado, I'm going to jump into a little PowerPoint slide that I have prepared for you with a little bit of a history kind of to walk you through how I got involved in this whole adventure. So let's pull that off and then make sure that I've got my screen set up correctly. Here we go. Let's see if
this should work, and it might not be powerful. Yes, it did. So, my history is, as part of the Cousteau family, is one that has featured heavily with me. That's actually not me, that's my father. I'm going to do a quick history lesson in 5 minutes or less. My grandfather, Jacques Cousteau, there on your, I guess, facing, well, on my left, on a ladder there with one of the original Aqualung tanks. My grandfather was the co-inventor of the Aqualung or scuba tank back in the 1940s and was a pioneer of ocean exploration and conservation and environmental conservation and filmmaking for 50 years, really helping us to explore the world beneath the sea. He, you know, it's hard for us to remember that when we were little, or even not necessarily when we were, but our grandparents were little, people didn't know what Nemo looked like, or Flipper, or Shamu. The oceans were really a mystery. And my grandfather helped to pioneer, along with my father, there he is as an older gentleman, as a grown-up, exploration and adventure using film and media and television and books and radio for, as I said, decades. That influenced me tremendously, of course, growing up in the work that I do today. And that's how I started out, a little redhead, believe it or not, and to a towhead. So I don't know how that happened, and in just a few years went from red to blonde. But nevertheless, being with my grandfather had a huge influence growing up. And I remember in particular, I want to share a story with you, actually, because I think of ourselves, if anything, we're storytellers. I was in, it was 1989. I was 9 years old, and Game Boy had just come out. You guys remember Game Boy? Yep. That was like the coolest thing on the planet. I'm sure if you showed some, you know, a kid a Game Boy today, they'd be like, is that a brick for like building something? But at the time, the coolest thing possible. And if you remember, this is how primitive compared to even our cell phones that was at the time. The little screen, the little black and white screen, anyone? Tetris players from Super Mario Brothers. Remember they sold a magnifying glass to put onto that so you could actually see what you were looking at? So I remember we were having dinner in New York with my grandfather, and he was talking about pretty serious conservation stuff. And we were, you know, I was nine. I was like, oh. And after, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes of this, my grandfather turns to me and goes, and he's like, now what about that Game Boy? And I talk about the magic words. I was like, uh-huh. And lit up. I mean, Game Boy was the coolest thing on the planet for anybody who was 9 years old in 1989. And he proceeded to talk about Game Boy and how excited he was. I have no doubt he spent a lot of time playing Tetris himself on all the myriad plane rides that he was on, because he did get one. But he was fascinated with Game Boy not just as a tool, he told me, for entertainment, but as a tool for education. Of course, this is coming from a man who pioneered television as a tool for education, radio, live events, books. They even did comic books. They did everything from a media perspective back in the day that was available to them. And that stuck with me. And it inspired me, of course, all of his work to go on in conservation and the work that I did. This is back, you know, a few years later in my early 20s, doing a film with BBC, film series with BBC. That's actually a coconut crab off the coast of Mozambique in Africa. They are so strong, they can actually lift the equivalent of about 40 or 50 pounds and crack coconuts and shred them apart. Different story, though, different time. Nevertheless, we got an opportunity, and I've had an opportunity to travel around the world in exploration and filmmaking, and now I work, as I said, with CNN. This is us in the Arctic in March of last year, filming and living in unheated tents on the ice in minus 50 degrees to tell the story of some of the science that's going on about climate change up there. So that traditional media part of my life has always been important, but I'll say that the idea of an interactive game always stuck with me. And this is actually a video from a gameplay that we did with, how many people, Jeffrey?
130
people in Virginia about a year ago. And it was not just students from University of Virginia. There were professors. There were also citizens. There were some policymakers, some fishermen. I remember one fisherman in particular. The guy was, I think, 72 or 73 years old. He'd been a lobsterman or a fisherman since he, or waterman as they call them in the Chesapeake, since he was like 15 or something.
Yeah.
So he'd been a lobster, you know, a waterman for like 60 plus, 50 plus odd years. And he comes into this. We cajoled him to come in. We wanted a waterman in the gameplay. And he's like, you know, I don't even have a computer. I don't have one of those cell phone thingy majigs. He's like, all this technology is ridiculous. You know, I came as a favor to a friend, and I'll see how this goes. by the end of it, about 2 hours later, he was like, this is incredible. This is an incredible tool that can so help people understand the interconnected nature, not only of ecosystems, but also to see each other as partners, not as adversaries, which we'll get to in a second, in the management of these systems. And it opened his eyes to the not only the possibility, but I think he learned a few things playing this game. And he has spent his life, probably longer than almost anyone else in the world, utilizing and living off of the Chesapeake Bay. So with that, before I move on to the panel, I wanted to show you a quick little video that we have that that will give a small introduction to the UVA Bay game, give us all a grounded level of understanding, and then we'll go on to the panel. Let me see where this is. Here. Playing just fine right before this panel started. Isn't that always the way? There we go. At a glance.
Azure Worldwide is a creative development company, and we are partnering with University of Virginia to engage people to take action in their communities and understand the importance of the environment.
The UVA Bay game is a one-of-a-kind educational life game that represents the interrelated behaviors of all the farmers, people who fish on the bay, crabbers, watermen, real estate developers, and government policymakers who make important decisions about water quality in the bay.
They can not just be game players, but game changers, where they're fundamentally engaging with other stakeholders in their role in this game and figuring out ways to make the system work for everybody.
In the game, it's constantly prompting you to learn from your mistakes. You can play it over and over and over until you understand what the concepts are.
But when you give them the opportunity to really engage in and take on a role and take ownership of that role, there's actually a lot of research that supports the idea that when people do this, they learn more, they learn better.
Well, this is really exciting because we get to sort of play this game, play this role, and see how our actions affect the health of the bay.
I am part of the James River team, and my role is to be a crop farmer, and all of us must work together to go towards the main health of the bay.
Everybody's got to come together. 100 people can't do it, but 100,000 can. You know,
everybody has a role to play, so games like this can help people understand the possibility that something they do will actually improve conditions.
The other beauty of the Bay game is it allows us to look forward. We don't have to wait 5, 10, 15, 20 years to see if the actions that we're taking are really having the desired impacts.
The reality is that these problems, because they are so broad, they do require an interdisciplinary team. We need people with all kinds of different expertises and perspectives to address these issues.
It involves currently about 51,000 differential equations. So it's a pretty substantial model that underlies the game interface.
It would have been impossible without bringing together all of the other kinds of expertise that different faculty bring, that the different students have brought, to make it a seamless whole.
Having worked with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation for now about 15 years on restoring the Chesapeake Bay, this is the first of its kind.
The Chesapeake Bay is the largest estuary in the country. 16.7 million people live around the Chesapeake Bay, and many livelihoods are dependent upon a healthy bay.
Chesapeake Bay is a big place. There's a lot of water out there, and there's a lot of pollution.
Despite a lot of good work in the past year, the bay's health still remains pretty degraded and in pretty poor condition. So what that tells us is that over the past 25 years, there's been a lot of good activity, but it's just not enough.
These kinds of video games, I think, are the future.
My hopes for the students that get to play this game are whatever role they're going to have. Some of them will end up being policymakers. All of them are going to be citizens, and all of them then will have an opportunity. They'll understand some of the complexities of the system and understand some of the implications of their choices that they make.
Without a healthy environment, we cannot have a healthy economy, a healthy society.
I think the UVA Bay game should be looked at by all of the regulatory boards in the state, not just the Marine Resources Commission. I think they could all learn from it.
We should continue to support the development of games for learning precisely because they provide people an opportunity to experience and make sense of this information in a real active and engaging way.
This game is a tremendously powerful tool.
So not only can they play the Chesapeake Bay game, but with a little bit of tweaking, we got to be able to modify this game to be played in other watersheds in the U.S.
Nothing else exists out there. This is an incredible opportunity to help us all.
Unless everybody wins, nobody wins.
Groovy. Let's see here. I'm going to pull this back up because I have one more slide. So the Bay game, and you know, when we learned about it through building relationships with the University of Virginia, we were based out of Washington, D.C. In its early stages, we immediately saw the potential. The Chesapeake Bay, as I said, 16.7 million people live on and around the Chesapeake Bay, and millions of people rely on it for their livelihoods. And immediately what we saw, the opportunity with UVA, was this balance, this their understanding that you can't have environmental sustainability without social sustainability. And the game really seeks to help various different agents or various different players, where you play a different citizen or a different player in the of the Chesapeake Bay system, say a waterman, a policymaker, a farmer. Each individual person plays that role or various different roles, and then you have to find over 20 years how you can balance the health of the system. So I'll let Jeffrey explain a little bit more about that, but it is truly a remarkable tool. Now, I want you guys to also be thinking that we can't have talk about technology and media and interactive media and the internet without having a little bit of fun. So, everybody likes contests. Everybody likes to win stuff. This is real time happening over the next 45 minutes. If you tweet using the hashtag UVA Bay Game, five people, we have someone back in our offices, actually this is courtesy of Ashok and Bennu, we have an individual back in New York who is tracking those tweets and will choose five people that I believe we'll be able to announce at the end of this panel who wins. We'll have to ship you the stuff later, but you will know right away, instant gratification. Or do you have it all?
Some of it.
Some of it. We have some of it.
Depending on your size.
We have some of the stuff, but we'll ship you the prizes in real time. So if you tweet and use that hashtag, you have a chance, pretty good chance, of being one of the five people by the end of this panel in the next, 40 minutes. So I'll leave that up. In the meantime, if you don't mind, I like to walk around a little bit. And I want to jump into the panel discussion with Jeffrey here with my first question. And that is, Jeffrey, tell us how the game works and really the history and the origins of the game and the vision behind the Bay Game when you started this at UVA.
Thanks, Philippe. And welcome. It's a delight to be here. The first part of Philippe's question is a nuts and bolts question. I'll give you a nuts and bolts answer for it. Players take on the roles of stakeholders who contribute to the nutrient flow, nitrogen and phosphorus, into the Chesapeake Bay. So we have farmers, we have developers, we have watermen who are on the receiving end, and we have policymakers who are associated with those activities. The game takes place over 20 years. For the first 10 years, we have real-world data. For the second 10 years, we have projected data. We challenge, as Philippe said, players to balance economic and environmental progress. We give them financial portfolios. We give them decisions, and we tell them what the environmental impacts of those decisions might be. So players make decisions every 2 years. The game crunches their decisions and gives them information back about their financial situation, about the health of the bay, and they now need to make a new set of decisions about new information. There's a hurricane that occurs during the game, and population increases over the gameplay. So students, players begin to get a sense of how the system of interconnected parts works. And you know, we designed this game as an academic tool. We wanted to teach students about the watershed as a complex system. It is a complex system of human behavior and natural processes. And when you teach a class, whether it's commerce or architecture or environmental science, you only look at a piece. We wanted a simulation that would enable students to see how the whole system worked. And this was our initial intent, to create a simulation that would enable students to experience the system. When we started testing our prototype, we were surprised by an emerging game feature that we had not anticipated, and that is the behavior change of the players. Players typically start off wanting to be good farmers or good developers or good policymakers. A couple moves into the game, some of the players realize that they can't achieve what they want to achieve without knowing what other players are doing. So they start to exchange information. And as they exchange information, they collaborate. The first kind of collaboration that we see is probably the last one that you see in the real world. So a farmer will turn to his or her regulator, policymaker, and say, give me incentives. Or why are you making it so hard for me to make money? I can't make any money with your taxes. And the policymaker says, well, you're causing environmental harm. We can't let you do this. So these players start yelling at each other, and in the process of their discussion, they try to optimize their relationship. So as the game moves forward, you see players start talking to each other about optimizing their relationships. By the end of the gameplay, the room of players is abuzz with conversations about optimizing relationships. And so I think this is how we got the game that we've been working with for the past couple of years.
Well, and Jeffrey, you bring up something really important, because if you remember the photograph that I showed, the way the gameplays that we've, most of the gameplays that we've done have played out is essentially you have different areas, different watersheds in the same room at the same time. And each watershed is assigned, let's say you're a policymaker and you're a farmer and you're a waterman and you're a developer. So as what you do as a policymaker starts to affect the farmers and the watermen and the developers, they have an opportunity to then have a dialogue with you. Not only that, because there are multiple watersheds in the Chesapeake Bay and multiple people are playing multiple watersheds, at the end of each round represents 2 years, so you play 10 rounds over, you're playing 20 years in about 2 hours or so. The idea is that people can then look at the James and go, wait a second, they figured something out. They're doing better than we are at the end of this round. And what you find over time is that typically, because in the real world, all of these relationships, or many of these relationships, see themselves as adversarial. You look online, or you look at the screen and the standings, and they go, wait a second, the James or the Susquehanna, they figured it out. And by the third or fourth round, in the beginning, everybody's very siloed, as Jeffrey said. By the third or fourth round, policymaker from the James is getting up and going over to policymaker from the Susquehanna. And fisherman from the Susquehanna is getting up and going over to see fisherman from the James. And you start to get this cross-pollination of knowledge and ideas. And that is what's not happening in the real world. Because people, as Jeffrey said, is the big aha moment that we find with this game. We see one of the huge potentials is people start out seeing themselves as adversarial, and then all of a sudden they start to see themselves as partners in this process. And I'm wondering, Carrie, in the corporate world and some of the challenges that you face, is that also an issue from an adversarial perspective? Policymakers, you know, economics, corporate people, consumers, there's not always a harmonious balance there.
Right, exactly. So we became really interested in this sort of thing when we're looking at, we have most of our manufacturing facilities in arid regions, and the semiconductor industry uses water. That's how we make our microprocessors. And so it is very much along those lines. And what you don't ever want to have is, say, a big industrial player pitched against a farmer or someone else trying to have conflicts over water. And so it's very much along those same lines, is how does everyone come together to look at what is best
for the overall region, right? Not just for one very specific player, not for just the people who have been farming the land for 200 or 300 years, not for the big company that's in the area or the big companies. And so using these sorts of simulations is where we have found the leverage point in education and looking at the best place scenario.
Right. We've had quite a bit of interest from the private sector in this kind of technology for exactly that reason. Big water users, companies that use a lot of water in manufacturing or in producing products like GE, like Coca-Cola, like Intel, realize that they're facing risks for access to water going forward. And they realize that they need to mitigate those risks, and that risk mitigation involves working with stakeholders in a watershed. So our technology is perfect for stakeholder engagement because it represents key stakeholders and shows how the parts move together. Another reason why the private sector has been so interested in our tool is that it provides a way for them to convert risk into business opportunity. So GE organized a gameplay for their water business network in Washington last year. And at the end of the game, the chief sustainability officer for GE Water said that if you can give visibility to information in the way that a simulation like this does, you can motivate the private sector to become a change agent, because it will find opportunities for business development in this kind of information.
Yeah.
Anything to add? I show it from a consumer-based perspective, because, of course, consumers also see themselves not always as collaborators or that even this type of thing is their problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the important point for me is that the example of the UVA Bay game represents a broader sort of green tidal wave of green gamification that's, you know, really capturing the attention of the green community and the business community as a whole. Green Biz, which is sort of the authority on the green business space, as the name implies, just listed green gamification as one of the top 10 sustainability trends to look out for in 2012. And again, green gamification itself is a subset of the broader gamification movement that, you know, is really, really inescapable right now when you talk about marketing in general. And I think there's a few reasons for that. I'm often ask the question, you know, why are people playing so many games today? And, you know, I've sort of justified it in my own head by seeing the similarity between games and ketchup. So if you think about ketchup, it's baked into our early socialization. If you give a kid a bottle of ketchup, you're going to give yourself a cleanup job because they're going to go to town with it. At the same time, games, like Philippe's memory of with his Game Boy, are something that we get exposed to very early on. So for me, it was playing Memory and then actually getting a Game Boy as my only console system, and playing Gargoyle's Quest for as many hours as the batteries at that time, you know, not being eco-friendly, would allow. Games also have a very wide application. So, you know, they can be used for professional development, they can be used just to time pass, or they can be used for behavior change, as in the case of the UVA Bay game. And, you know, finally, everybody loves games, just like everybody loves ketchup. If you don't like ketchup, you probably don't like babies and puppies and, you know, other really awesome things, and, you know, I just feel bad for you. So, you know, I think what we're doing is sort of taking advantage of, you know, this broader movement in using fun to change behavior, and there's a lot of examples of that.
Yeah. Well, and I was just going to say, Carrie, I wanted to jump to you because it's also applicable.
Absolutely. I think it's from a corporate perspective, and I can play it from multiple hats here, but from an Intel perspective, we obviously believe in the power of technology, right? And we believe in the power of technology for people to change their behaviors after using the technology. And so we are looking at this not only in how we can ourselves learn about things, and the corporate world can learn about things, but also as individuals. So we look at all the way from the consumer, the person here that's trying to make decisions on, well, how should I be behaving towards water? You know, what should I be doing here? Well, I probably shouldn't be drinking this, but I'm thirsty. all the way to, if you're a corporation and a stakeholder, then what is your role? And if you're a policymaker. So we also look at the opportunities for technologies to help inform people almost looking at it as a way of enabling a more technocratic society in which people are making decisions based on sound science, which includes the social sciences. So we are looking at it across the board. And I don't know that all the companies are, right? I don't know that a beverage company would be looking at it the same way, but definitely it applies to all the different actors.
Well, what specifically has been your experience with the, I'm curious, with the Bay Game?
Well, my experience was we ran a scenario at one of our water conferences, a water innovations conference, and these are all the people who think that they're coming up with, and they are coming up with, really innovative technologies to better manage water. And so you have supposedly a room full of water experts, water technology experts. We're playing the game, and it was this similar sort of scenario. Lights are going off. People are saying, I had no idea. Like, for example, I hadn't really paid much attention to the large-scale farming and how animals are contributing to the phosphate problem in this very specific Chesapeake Bay. I understood the overall aspects, but I hadn't understood the intricacies. And so you saw those same aha moments. And this is a room full of people who would consider themselves somewhat water experts. And the trade-offs, right, and the collaboration.
Right. So, if we're in that business, we should be in this business.
Exactly.
Too, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So.
So, very experiential learning. Do you see applicability to this type of game to a broader audience, to this technology,
absolutely,
to decision making across the board in any environment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, we're specifically talking about watersheds, but when you start looking at how do we plan? How do we plan for our communities? How do we plan for other natural resources? And Ashok mentioned that there's all sorts of different games for global warming, for example, right? People trying to understand emission types of schemes. So I think it's very, very applicable. And it happens right now on the simulation scale, but not necessarily on the participatory simulation scale, which takes it up another level, right? Because you're actually getting the human interaction instead of these big computers doing all the decisions.
Right. And I want to remind everybody, when we talk about water, we're talking about the biggest crisis in the 21st century. And these issues affect every single person in this room and how we manage them. And any of you who live in Texas, think of the drought last year. The idea that a billion people today live without an adequate supply of fresh water. Dirty water is the number one killer of children under 5. We have 2 billion more people coming on board on this planet over the next 40 years, and yet we don't know how we're going to feed those people, and we certainly don't know how we're going to provide enough clean water for those people. And solving that problem is important, is up to consumers, is up to corporations, up to nonprofits, up to higher education institutions. And we are going to clearly have to think outside the box because we have not found the solution. Things are, in many cases, getting worse with respect to natural resource decline and population growth. So I'm curious then, from the perspective of public interaction, not just with respect to the Bay Game, but just in terms of sustainability in general, how can we find and develop this newer secret sauce to try and chart a new course in your experience?
So the good news is that it's already happening. I think, as Carrie mentioned, technology as a tool has allowed a great variety of gaming applications and, of course, the sharing of games. And fundamentally, games are a social act. That's, why they're so popular. So what I've seen in the work that I've been doing is that there is an incredible mix of mobile and online and even offline applications that apply game mechanics and game thinking to promote the broader idea of sustainability. So I'll just run through, a few examples right now. That are companies that many of you have probably already heard of. Recycle Bank is sort of a leading player in the green reward space. They just got named one of the 50 most innovative companies in the world by Fast Company. And they have a number of different web-based quizzes and challenges to help people take small green steps that will hopefully lead to behavior change. Another example that's been around for 10 years or so is TerraCycle, New York-based company where I'm from. And they developed the, I think, first really, really good social game, as you can see. It looks a lot like Cityville or Farmville, but in fact, it's called Trash Tycoon, and you're recycling in the game, earning virtual currency that you can redeem for real-world goods or experiences. And the great thing with TerraCycle, since they're an actual upcycling company, is you can earn points in the real world that can be then applied as virtual currency online. So there's this dialectic, dynamic between what you do online and offline to reinforce your green behaviors. And that's really important because the one thing I always caution people about in developing games is not to stay, in the digital world, because our problems all occur in the real world. So there has to be this bridge between the two. A more recent example of a really exciting recycling platform, it's a Boston-based company called Green Bean. And the key, you recycle at kiosks, right now they just piloted successfully at MIT, is that they turn your recycling activities into sort of tangible outcomes in how much electricity you're saving. So another key principle is to bring these high-level green actions down to earth so people can understand the real impact that they're having. Practically Green is another Boston-based company that uses web and mobile apps to use leaderboards and to sort of create that healthy competition that also, Jeffrey's found where, foes become friends when it comes to gaming and to kind of create this green race to the top. The Mutual is a new company that's been called the Groupon for Good, and what they do is reward people for giving philanthropic contributions to give access to a number of experiential and stuff-based rewards from all of their local partners. So it's a new company that's just starting to get a lot of buzz. My Energy actually links into your utility account, so you can keep track of how much water and energy you're using month to month. The average person doesn't look at their utility bill once over the course of a year. So what My Energy is doing is giving you real-time feedback, and that's another important principle. Jeffrey talked about how information from the watershed is constantly being fed into the game to give people status updates, and that real-time feedback is a key element of game design. And the other thing is it's not just startups that are doing this. So this is a dashboard called Car Wings from the Nissan Leaf, which is, of course, an alternative energy vehicle. And it keeps track of your eco-friendly driving habits and has a dashboard that compares you to your friends and other Leaf owners. And that's applying this concept of social comparison, where you don't want to be the person who's driving the gas-guzzling SUV on your block when the guy next to you or the girl next to you is driving a Prius. So it's creating that sort of positive peer pressure. And another example from a big company is a mobile app, Green is Universal. It's NBC's Green Initiative, has a Tamagotchi-style game called iBloom, where you take care of a plant, and it uses all the touch and sort of motion features of the iPhone so you can navigate pollution and other environmental hazards in order to raise a healthy plant. So those are all high-tech solutions. A last point I just want to make is that the ideas behind gamification are very fundamental to being human. Behavioral psychologists like Maslow and Skinner identified all these needs that we have to be social and to achieve and to compete, decades ago. And, when you strip away the five-syllable word and all the high technology, it's really just about having fun and developing relationships. So recently, my company worked with a group called the Green Schools Alliance. It's a nonprofit that promotes greening in schools. And we had a group of students from Atlanta that won a video contest with a little song called So Fresh, So Green. So I'll just show you guys a quick snippet of that, and then we'll wrap up. And these are high school students from Marist in Atlanta, Georgia.
Everybody hugging trees, we're just so fresh and green.
So fresh and so green, green.
R-E-C-Y-C-L-E, we're just so fresh and green.
So fresh and so green, green.
Everybody hugging trees, we're just so fresh and green.
So fresh and so green, green.
We love saving energy, we're just so fresh and green.
So fresh and so green, green.
The sweet ones that redemption be, she asked for Roger Mike again. I'll take the mic again, already I'm recycling. The freshest have you seen us, all the ladies were my Prius. Saving so much forward seems to me like we're a greenery. Greedy for green leaves like the Grinch who stole your Christmas tree. Listen please, for all the haters trying to trash talk, if you aren't spitting garbage, then go throw it in the right box. Alright boss, and turn the lights off.
Everybody
All right, so you can see the rest of it online at YouTube. But again, you see that this is about fun, and it's just really inspiring. Philippe does a lot of work with young people, too. I mean, I know when I was in high school, you know, I wasn't nearly as environmentally conscious as I am today. And this is the stuff that's going on right now. You know, this is about having fun and celebrating our love for the Earth.
And young people are innovating a lot in this space. You know, I visited schools here in the U.S. where the water's not clean enough for the kids to drink, and teachers have to bring gallons of water to the class for the students. So this is not just an issue when we talk about developing countries in this world. This is a challenge that we face in the United States. And fully, I don't want to throw a scary amount of the water in this country that we use does not pass clean water standards. So it's a challenge we face today here in the United States. So before we go into Q&A, I just wanted to kind of give Kerry and Jeffrey a chance to think about. Kerry, we'll start with you. Where do you see this going in the future? And then Jeffrey, what is the next step plans for the Bay Game itself?
Well, I think there's all sorts of examples of very small opportunities for games and people's interaction with them to educate, all the way up to these massive types of systems, if you will. So there's an example of an organization based in Geneva that is looking at a whole Earth system simulation, and they are trying to bring in all the different aspects of economics, environmental, as well as all these social sciences, which is oftentimes left out of these types of situations. And like you talked about, the social impacts. And so to have a huge, if you will, supercomputer cluster based on this simulation, and then to have all the different stakeholders coming in and participating in that, you know, that's kind of the big ultimate vision of where it can go. But I think that the power is also in every single person engaging in some sort of gaming application.
Right. For the Bay Game, over the next 6 to 12 months, we want to convert the technology that we use to build the Chesapeake Bay simulation into a general platform that we can use for creating a simulation of any watershed anywhere. We also want to test our modeling against an arid watershed. The Chesapeake Bay watershed has water quality problems, not really water quantity problems. So we want to build a simulation of a water quantity watershed. And we've been working closely over the past year with a group in the Murray-Darling Basin in Australia to do a arid watershed simulation with a group of stakeholders. That's where we plan to go. We hope that we will have a tool that anybody will be able to use for developing these kinds of simulations, and we're eager to network and partner with groups of any kind to see what the best mix of technology, the best scale of simulating might be. So I welcome the opportunity to hear from you and talk with you further about your watersheds, your groups, and your interests.
So we've got about 15 minutes left. I think you've heard enough from us. We would love to hear from you guys. So any questions, comments about this?
Yeah. So I've been looking at sustainability games. Oh, thanks. For a while, actually. And there are lots for kids and teenagers. Loads. I don't think I found one for adults. For this crowd. So, what does it take? That's one question. The second question is, I'm wondering, who's working on a game now on sustainability? One? Okay, who
Two.
Is interested in working on a game on sustainability? Here we go. Come to talk to me, then.
So, that's a good question. You know, there is a lot of games out there for young people, though I think, Ashok, the My Energy piece that you talked about at the very least is geared towards anybody. My Energy and O Power, and there's a couple of these companies, and we're actually looking at them as well, and looking at the idea of how do we plug these actually into the Bay Game so that we can have the Bay Game another goal for us in the long run is, this is a more medium and long-term goal, is saying, all right, how can we have and track behaviors of players in the real world and have that affect their actions in the game and start to merge and meld the virtual and the game with the real and do that in a simple way. So O-Power and MyEnergy are some companies that are now working with utilities, and it's got to be easy, and this is important. People go in, they just enter their information, as long as these companies have a deal with their local utility or water provider. MyEnergy, I believe, can track water, mm-hmm. gas, okay. and energy, electricity. And the idea is that it's easy, then it tracks your technology or your usage, excuse me, every month automatically, based on previous months and same time a year ago. So there are some beginnings for adults. Now, as respect to the Bay game, as you see, we look at this as a tool for adults and for youth as well. We've done, as Jeffrey said, games for GE. We've been working with Intel, Coca-Cola, etc. We've also worked with high school AP graduate students in Virginia. We have worked with college level students. Because it's a good question. As the show pointed out, we all love to play. We all love games. So how do we make this a tool that is ubiquitous and a tool that is age agnostic, or at least that is modified to work with multiple ages, and it's something that we take seriously? I don't know if
right.
you guys wanted to add to that.
Well, I think Ashok is right that there is a tidal wave of interest in this technology and these applications, and there are lots of open questions about what the optimal scale is, about what the optimal level of fidelity is in simulating human behavior and natural processes. Our goal is to find the right combination of features that enable the fidelity of human behavior to be represented, because we're really talking about human behavior here. And the other open question that I think we're all sharing is, how do we connect the virtual and the real world? How do we exploit the enormous potential of gaming technology for behavior change? We want to lead in this effort, and I think the collaborative ethos that enabled the development of our tool may take us a few more steps further. So we're looking to collaborate with other sectors to make that connection between, say, the academic world and the real world, the world of virtual games and the world of policy making and individual and collective behavior. This is a great time for innovation and finding the right scale, the right kind of fidelity, and the right business model. These are questions that we're all exploring.
I'll get to you, I promise. Next question, Becky.
Whether the model for the game is a duration of several days for corporate conferences or for semester for student interaction, or if it's ongoing, and if it's ongoing, have your participants continue to play?
It can be any of those. It can be played by a group of people in one sitting of, say, 2 hours. And Ann Jennings, who you saw in the video, remarked to us after the gameplay that she participated in, I've spent 25 years trying to tell citizens that this is how it works. And you can see it with this Bay game in an hour. It's great. So you can play it in one sitting in an hour, two. You can play it over 2 or 3 or 4 weeks in a classroom, and after each move, the game will calculate the data and give all the players their new financial reports, their new market prices for their goods and so forth. We're experimenting with all of those potential formats that you suggested, because we can see applications for them. And if you have particular applications that you're interested in trying out in your own watershed, we're interested in hearing about them so that we can learn more about the market apart from the educational context.
Yes.
Hi, Jeffrey. So the UVA Bay game is, you know, the outcome of the UVA Bay game is based on a model which you developed. Could you speak really briefly, without being too technical, on how confident you are that this model actually represents, you know, the actual outcome in real life? And what about situations in which there isn't a model for it? You know, how would you approach that?
Those are great questions, and questions that are very important in applying the virtual to the real world. When we designed the Bay game, we deliberately determined that a 20-year period with the first 10 years of real-world data would be important for many reasons. One reason is that it would enable us to validate our technology. So we set up the human behavior at the beginning of our simulation based on the year 2000 practices. And we just let the game run forward without any actors. And we nail all of the new nitrogen, phosphorus, Bay health numbers for the year 2010.
If you let the model run, you let the model run by itself from 2000 to 2010, which is the last time we have real data for the Chesapeake Bay, it tracks reality.
Right.
So it ends up in 2010, just the model giving the same, roughly, with a small level of error, roughly the same numbers as we're really coming out into the Bay.
Right.
That gave us a high degree of confidence that over a course of 10 years, the Bay was pretty darn accurate.
Yes.
I know we had another question up here. Does that answer all your questions? Or you had one more about how when there's not data?
When there's like a new problem or the problem that's not.
For the specifically Chesapeake Bay or for any system? Well, right now, definitely what we're looking at is how do we adapt this game to other watersheds? And that's over the next 6 to 12 months, one of the challenges before us and what we're digging into. Jeffrey just was down in Australia not long ago visiting with the Darling Watershed, the folks down there, looking at that region. You visited with Arizona as well.
But there's a fascinating question in the second half of your comment, and it has to do with decision-making under conditions of uncertainty. And we need the capacity as a nation, as a global community, to make decisions about the environment under conditions of increasing uncertainty. So this is a real world problem. The climate is changing, and the impact of climate change can't be forecast. We can understand a range of possible effects. We need adaptive management institutions to address a changing environment. We don't have these right now. A recent National Academy of Sciences report on climate change said it doesn't matter who caused it or what's happened so far, we need to figure out how to respond to change, not knowing what the final outcomes are going to be. And so the simulation that we've developed gives players the opportunity to experience this process. Each time they come to make a move, their little world has changed a little bit. And because it has changed a little bit every time, they know it's going to be different the next time, but they don't know exactly how. And so tools like this are really training grounds for understanding what it would mean to do adaptive management of complex systems. And according to the National Academy of Sciences, this is an urgent national priority.
Right. Time is definitely of the essence. So we're in a total beta mode right now for green gaming as a whole. You know, the approach is really to act, refine, and improve. But that's why it's also exciting, because we're making history. So the gentleman that's working on a green game, let's rock and roll, because, you know, we have to do this. And it's the best promise that we have for really moving green from a niche to the mainstream.
We've got 3 minutes left. I promise we get one more question in, so we're going to have to be very brief with the questions, and then we'll announce the winners, which is fun.
Thanks for taking my question.
So you're looking to adapt this game to other watersheds. It seems to me that with so many players engaged in this game at any given time, you could really take advantage of massively multiplayer online gameplay and kind of crowdsource data collection on other watersheds. Have you considered that? Is there an effort to implement that?
That's a great idea. We would love to move in that direction. It's a matter of resources and time. One of the great things about coming from a university is that we have lots of intellectual resources that we can integrate. And the downside of coming from a university is that there are a lot of independent actors, and coordinating, aligning interests sometimes can be a challenge. But we are very interested in those opportunities.
Well, and that's why we compose this panel the way that we compose it, with corporate representation, consumer representation, consumer-facing representation, though corporate also has an element of that, and higher education and the NGO world, is because to be able to find the solutions and start to think about what are the needs of various different constituencies, we have to figure that out first before we can really start to crowdsource. Because corporations have lots of employees, have lots of people. Even under that auspice, we can begin to start to understand that crowdsourcing element. That's kind of what we're baby steps in doing.
Yeah. And there's definitely other corporations that are really active in this. Like Siemens, for example, has a game called Plantville, and they are looking at the operations of their plants in their communities and working with customers, working with other people. But I think the key thing is to get lots of these talking to each other and working together, like you said, right? Because the power is in the mass collaboration of this, not necessarily in these isolated, you know, games that work in one watershed, the Rio Grande, the Colorado River Basin, the Yangtze. That's not where the real collective power is, because lots of these are transboundary issues we can learn from each other, et cetera. So that's a good challenge, I think, for the audience and the panel.
So we have a minute left, and we have some winners on the Twitter challenge. I'd like to thank you all for participating. We had how many? Over 250 tweets?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
South by Southwest.
You guys like swag. I like that. That's good. So like I said, it'll be a varied selection of the items. Some of the items that are on, these are examples of items up on the screen, and I will pass it off to Ashok to announce.
Sure. So drum roll, please. So what we like to say at Bennu is that the new spirit of sustainability is fortune, fun, and fame, not blame and shame. And that's kind of, you know, the spirit behind gamification as a whole. So we have five winners who I believe are probably in the audience today, and you can come get your swag from this handsome gentleman, Brian, who's floating around here. You'll see him afterwards. But the winner of the Philippe Cousteau signed book is at Stephen C. Webster. And I'm pretty sure, Stephen, you can sell that on eBay and make back the money you spent for your badge and next year's as well.
Like 15 cents.
I don't know. But
I'll give you a quarter.
At Gillinger won a UVA Bay shirt. Are you here? Again, you can come up afterwards. It could be that some of these people are in the virtual world as well. At Teresa Dacio 14 won this Green It bag, which is made out of recycled plastic bottles.
Anyone? That person? Not here?
We'll contact you afterwards if you're somehow paying attention online. At Alea Espiao 9 won a UVA shirt. Sometimes reciting Twitter handles is harder than Bangladeshi last names. It's okay, my father's Bangladeshi. At Design Coyote won the So Fresh, So Green shirt made out of recycled cotton and recycled plastic bottles. So thank you all again for participating. Philippe, thank you.
Yes, thank you guys.